This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 14th of June, 1962. The title of this lecture is Future Technology. This tape is 65 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Well, you, I'll have to tell me the date. 14th. What planet? I got so many calls to make these days, you know. 14 June, 8012, St. Hill Special Briefing Course. You know, there was a great many students came in first part of the year, and that has sort of peaked the attendance here for a while. And when they arrived, they didn't know whether they'd be classified or not. And when they leave, they sometimes are and sometimes aren't. I'm going to talk to you about training a little bit more in this lecture. Now, you think you are traveling fast now. You will think you are traveling so slow that your footprints are in front of you. Because this is the kind of a schedule that has to be met. Can I give you a short rundown on same what this is all about? Training, as you noticed, changed recently into three sections. Now, the three sections of training were theory, practical, and the auditing section. Definition of the three sections are simply, in theory, have to be able to duplicate the information in bulletins and tapes, texts. In practical, have to do the doingness angle of the thing. Now, practical actually used to be the auditing section. You know, used to fog around in it and that sort of thing. But the practical now is the supervision of doingness, just as doingness. The auditing section is the fait accompli. When you get into the auditing section, you're not supposed to be practicing, you're supposed to be auditing. Because frankly, the only thing that is looked at in the auditing section will be the results that you obtain. In practical, it's how you do it, and in the auditing section, the results. But of course, results are now dependent on the textbook solution, which is rather unique. It's unique in any science for any result to be obtained by the textbook solution. They teach nuclear physics today, and they still tickle the tiger's tail. See? They give you formulas, endless formulas, you know, and you're supposed to be able to figure it all out. And they do, they figure it all out, but it doesn't have anything to do with nuclear physics. They still get in there and shove bars of plutonium in and out of this and that. It's quite remarkable. They even run their submarines this way. The chief engineer of an atomic submarine has to know all of the theory in the world. See, he has to be a mathematical lord. And so when he wants the submarine to go faster, he goes down and shoves on a rod and adjusts it to a point where the water boils quicker. Crazy, you see. There's no textbook solution there at all. In medicine, the textbook solution is more often violated than otherwise, and if you use psychiatric textbook solutions, everybody'd be dead. As far as psychology is concerned, it hadn't ever pretended to have a solution for human beings. It only has solutions for animals. I didn't mean that as a dirty crack, because, frankly, we are burying them in their future. I invite you in the next decade to the funeral of both of those activities of psychiatry and psychology. It'll be a very sad funeral. But they haven't got any textbook solutions. And right now, we've moved up into the level of textbook solution. All right, last night, you saw a couple of auditing demonstrations. These were simply goal checkouts. I wanted you to see how you checked out a goal. That was the only reason I gave them. I didn't even particularly pick up goals that I wanted to check out or didn't want to check out. I thought I might learn something about it myself. How about a partly worded goal? How did it check out? The first case that you saw had 400 listed on each list of that particular goal. Now, if I'd tested it, you probably would have found the transfer of the goal reaction to one of the levels had I read the four lists off on the thing. You probably would have seen one of those lists ticking. If that one of those list lines had been ticking, then of course it tended to prove out the goal. Time was going on. I didn't want to upset anything, and I particularly didn't have any pat solution to it. Didn't want to say anything much more about it, because I wanted you to concentrate on just this other idea of how did you prep check a PC so as to prove up a goal. Now, there was a tick on the second PC's line reads. I don't know if you saw it or not. One of the lines ticked. Well, there's a high probability is that that goal could now be continued to be listed with profit. You could continue to list the goal with profit. Before I did anything more about this goal, I would read the lines off to it again, and I would ascertain what was cooking here, and test whether or not we could go on to a new goal, because I've already said I could always consider this goal a bit of a late one that might list longly, and so you might profitably transfer over to another goal, but that would only be if one of those lines wasn't ticking too hard, you see? In other words, the read that you get on a goal, I'm indebted for this term to Charles here. He said it very well. He said the read transfers. That's exactly correct. That well describes it. The read transfers from the goal to one of the lines that you're listing. You see, who or what would not oppose going to war, you see? Clank. All right, well, the goal to go to war wouldn't read, but the line would read if it's partially listed. Do you see that? There's more to be learned about this. There's more to be observed about this. But there were some partially listed goals, and I was simply checking them out, giving you a prep check example. Now, if you notice, on the second PC, we had a lousy, dirty needle. Now, you probably wondered why I didn't finish up my fish and fumble. I'd better tell you something about that, because there were two things that happened in that session that we might have missed. One of them is I didn't finish the fish and fumble. Every time the PC said goal, I got a dirty needle. So I found out I was fishing and fumbling for the goal. So I got out of there. I backed the fire engine right back into the stall. And we parked it right there and went on about our business. I thought you might possibly have missed that. It had been on already. And when I started to run it down to find out if we had a missed withhold or something of the sort, why, the PC discussing it, every time he came near the subject of goal, we had a missed withhold. We were prep checking the goal, so it was no time to fish and fumble for it, because we were about to run into the line very shortly on goals. Is there anything you failed to reveal, you see? And sure enough, we had it, and I finally had to ask him a slightly altered question. Who didn't find out about the goal, you see? Now, the auditor had already picked up one person that had not found out about this goal, and maybe some mention of the other people. I don't know if there was mention of the other people, too. But we got a bit of a change the second that we ran through that. But on the subject of listing, we got a considerable reaction. Remember? Now, on neither of these sessions would you have seen any reason to have called this a prep check. There was no who, there was no when, all, appear, or who. So where was the prep check? Well, I didn't run into anything that needed to be prep checked. You see? Everything cleared up on a couple of questions. See? So we're talking about a terribly short track. See, we're talking about the short track of auditing, or at best, this life's listing. So if we're talking about such a short track, and you can just knock it out, why, cheers. See, we'll do so. And the reason we call it prep checking is because we're always prepared to prep check, form up the what question, go on sailing back on the line, and do a stylized job on it. But on neither case did I run into any necessity to do so. See? Middle rudiments, prep checked out, gave us an interesting reaction on the part of the first PC. The first PC was very defensive. been talking to PC earlier, was actually very dismayed. We invited her, by the way, to stay over to see the demonstration tonight. And then as a complete beast, you see, I suddenly realized I'd like a look at that goal, and I'd like a look at the PC and see how the PC was operating, because the PC was a bit defensive about things, you see, so I put the PC on. It really took her by storm. And when she started into that session, she was really boggled. The rudiments were all out and crisscrossed, you know. But that was all right. Got a telex from her this morning. She felt wonderful, surprised her half to death, you see. She felt wonderful, and she was sawing into all the goals in the shop and had gotten another St. Hill graduate all straightened out on his goal. Well, she'd instantly put it all to use at a high degree of velocity. But before she was getting that prep check, she was pretty queasy about the whole thing. And she went away feeling fine. All right. What you saw in the prep check was all textbook solution. You notice that? There's no variation from the textbook. There was one blunder. I don't know if you noticed it. It was the second session, it was getting late, and I had not been crossing my list off, and I didn't know what I'd gotten a reaction on. I have a guilty conscience every time I make a PC expose something discreditable on a TV demonstration. I don't particularly like to do that to somebody, you know. Bang, you know, catch them and drive them into a corner, and so on. So he came up with a discreditable one on careful of, you know. And he exploded with it, and I looked down at my check sheet to ask the second question, and I had neglected to mark it up to that point. So I had to take the safe route out. I checked the ones I knew bridged into the ones that I had gotten a reaction. Okay. That was pure and simple a blunder. Okay. I didn't remember that it was careful of at the moment I asked it. He suddenly came up with this revelation, bang, you see, and what was it on invalidate, fail to reveal, or careful of, which? And there I sat. I don't know if you might not have noticed that, but notice, you might not have noticed it because it was a fairly smooth recovery. I just went simply back over to the last one I knew I had covered, took the next one, checked it, and finally, of course, had it, and it was careful of. Meantime, the PC was sitting there almost exploding with the next answer. But you notice it didn't disturb the PC. Now, those demonstrations you're seeing are textbook solutions. That is to say, that's textbook auditing. There isn't any departure from that. The only envisaged, and I should mention this to particularly those leaving, the only envisaged change in model session is to pull in this session to the head of all end rudiments. You precede them within this session. You've already had the change of the withhold question in beginning rudiments and end rudiments. But there is an additional change in model session, and I can't tell you its absolute final form, but it runs something like this because it's ragged. There's a raggedness to saying to somebody, do you have a present time problem? He says, yes. Well, where are you at? See? It's an understood question. So, you could consider your rudiments question, this is the solution that I am researching right now. Consider your rudiments question this way, that the needle acknowledges for the PC, so therefore you acknowledge for the PC. You answer for the PC. Now you see that that's going on all the time with this anti-Q&A anyhow. You answer for the PC. You say, do you have a present time problem? Clank. Well, you notice that you never wait to have the PC says he does or doesn't. You notice that you say he does or doesn't. See? You say, all right, yes, what's that? That red, you see? After a fellow's been audited for a very short period of time, he begins to expect this to happen, you see, and it is not disturbing at all. So that you've got a second question on all rudiments questions, which is simply, what is it? Just your second question. That's to keep the thing from hanging in the air. Now that's what I'm testing out at this particular time. So you say, do you have a present time problem? That red, what is it? And the PC says belatedly, you say, well, I'll repeat the question. What is it? Now, you might run into a snag that way, but that is, after a considerable amount of study, the only way I can see out of this particular dilemma that is smooth is just recover with a what is it. Don't use it every time, perhaps, but certainly, if your PC does not come up with the information instantly after you've answered for the PC, so you've already said yes, you say it read, and the PC, on, you just say, what is it? Don't leave the PC sitting there in a long calm lag. Got the idea. Now, there'd be some more data on that, but that's the only envisaged change. Now, training has worked out this way. The auditor who comes here usually has had lots of loses. He's had loses. Let's admit it, see? First place, he's been auditing up against a not totally refined technology. He's been doing this and that, and he's also been doing things that were way offline, and he's lost. He's had some loses. Furthermore, he didn't have the technology which cleared everybody who walked up the walk, you see? So naturally, he had some loses. All right, then the faster we get a student into the auditing section to get some wins, the better off we are. Simple. We already have the solution that gives them wins. Get the rudiments in and do havingness in the body of a session. Now, that'll give them some wins if they can read a meter, if they get the rudiments in, if they run the havingness process for the PC. So this calculation has moved up to this degree. If a student has not finished his theory practical and has not audited his rudiments and havingness in all of his prep check and finished up all that auditing and all of the theory and practical for that auditing, that's three classes, see? By the end of his sixth week, his chance of leaving here clear is greatly diminished. I was just working this out. Based on a 16-week course, if he has not finished up all of that work and that auditing, finished by the end of the sixth week, why, his chances of leaving here so clear that you wrap him on the rim and he rings for hours, these are badly diminished, you see. The chances of doing that. You follow this reasoning? Well, actually, it means for faster wins, if you look at it this way, because he's up against something that should win, and if he doesn't get a win, he'll be checked up on it in a hurry. So we look at the body of the course up to that point as a fait accompli, and then we go on at the beginning of the seventh week to find a goal and so forth. We might take that seventh week on a dual capacity. We let him start finding the goal, because already eaten prep checks. During that week, while he studies the theory and practice of what he is doing in a goals assessment like mad. Now we go on out to the far end of the course, the remaining many weeks of the course, up to 16 weeks, and we polish up this auditor. In other words, we polish him up. That doesn't mean that you who have not finished this by the end of the sixth week necessarily are out in the rain. But I would say, unless streams of sweat like Niagara Falls started falling from your brow, and if you have gone as much as 3 months now and are not yet on a goals assessment on anybody or on yourself and so on, your chances of leaving here clear quite poor. If you're only up to 2 months, well, we might make it rather easily. Still, you understand. If you're here 3 weeks and are still stumbling around with model session, you ought to have your head examined. You should have finished that at the end of the first week. See what I mean? Grooming up the auditor would most easily take place, of course. Making the auditor an absolute finished product would more easily take place after he'd had wins. You see? So anyway, we had a bit of a conference this afternoon, and that's what we were talking about. And we're going to run it from that particular quarter. Now, this has some influence on training outside. The St. Hill graduate, going out of here, at this stage of the game, is right at this moment, is the only one who knows anything about this three-section training system. And I have gotten back some questionnaires, answers from D's of T, that show they're terribly adrift. One of them wanted to know, many of them were very good, but some of them, one of them wanted to know what you did with the incoming students after all the old students had gotten up into higher classes if you were using the class system. That still got me boggled. I don't know what he doesn't know. That's rather marvelous. You get to ask him that as a question. I don't know what he's talking about. And a few questions of this character demonstrate that the workability and how the system goes together and so forth is very much a question in the minds of people out in academies and that sort of thing. So any assistance that any of you can give an academy in straightening this out would be appreciated. Any way you can give them a reality on it would be appreciated. But all training is going on to this pattern. I think you agree with me that it's a rather successful pattern of training. We should actually only be teaching here class three. That's what we all actually ought to be teaching. Training is slowed down by the fact that we have to groom up the earlier classes. That's what holds one back. But naturally, if we didn't have the technology, how could anybody learn it? If we didn't have it grooved and so on. But I've been working like mad along this particular line, and I finally got it grooved out. And your mistakes have served. Don't think that your mistakes have gone unacknowledged. Most of what we call a textbook solution today is in there to get around the mistakes you have made or to steer you through those chasms and back alleys that you might otherwise have gone into and so forth. For instance, we used to have as a maxim, the auditor must get an answer to every command he gives. Remember that? Yeah, but how few auditors knew this. We'd get a new auditor coming up the line, and all of a sudden he'd say, do cats spit, you know, do cats spit? And the PC, about every third time he asked it, you know, would say, I think so. And he thought this was all right, see. And of course you had your end rudiment set up and the PC is way out of session. And you'd be surprised how often this is the case. So much so that, you know, you could take an old-time auditor and ask him in the first session in which he had failed to answer an auditing command, and you find out you'd get a little bit of a case surge. Quite interesting. Just ask him, what was the first time you failed to answer an auditing question or command, you know? And it'll rip up the line like a mad buzzsaw. I remember Herbie one time when he first learned that. He just suddenly, on an ACC, and he just suddenly had remembered the first time, you know, made an awful difference to him. He walked out, he was glowing at the time. But So what do you have now? You have an end rudiment, something that constantly reminds the auditor of this. Constant. It's always in front of his eyes. Every time he goes down the model session line, he hits all the basic errors that have been constant and continuous in auditing. Of course, it so happens that these things are the sins of auditing. And when they're only the sins of auditing, when they're out of order, auditing doesn't take place. So of course, they do belong in as rudiments. But you see how the thing is packaged up. Instead of an isolated, unimportant maxim that nobody has ever read, the thing sits there and is done every session. Well, it works this way. The auditor going by this particular point is reminded every session, because he occasionally finds the thing out, you see. And he's reminded every session, you see, that he should get his auditing commands answered. The idea. And he's reminded about these other little points. He's reminded about the PC's overts during the session under the heading of damage, you see. All kinds of points are interwoven into this thing. Actually, to make an interesting crossword crazy quilt, if you figured out all of the things that have finally been lined up into the textbook solution. Actually, they're minimal. They're the minimal number. You could get far, far more expansive about this thing, but I'm certain now that you'd be running off in relatively unimportant data. Yeah, well, you could trim it up, see? You could put more in it, but you would be running off into unimportances. You'd be running off into things that processes or listing or something like that would normally care for. We've got the minimal number, well, we've got the minimum maximum. Beyond what we have as the textbook solution, you can be pretty confident that it can be safely ignored. If it isn't in the textbook solution, it can be ignored. Without vast consequences, don't you think? But those points which are the textbook solution, if ignored, will scuttle a lot. The ship will go down in a trail of bubbles. Now, there's only one thing that I myself have felt questioning about in all this. I've seen a PC get, and myself in one session, got sufficiently ARC broke that nothing in the rudiments or anything in any part of it would do anything about. That was very interesting. There was nothing would have done anything about any part of it. Why? Well, I finally worked it out, and you'll be interested in this little piece of technology here, which was based on a subjective reality. Why did nothing in the whole ready lot affect this particular ARC break line? You'll find out then that an ARC break can exist outside of this particular area. The healing of same is a bit too heroic to attempt. In other words, it's too big to straighten out in a rudiments proposition. And that is this. When a PC takes responsibility for withholding, it took me many weeks to finally curve down to what the answer to that was. Don't think about it too long, you get a headache. If a PC has taken responsibility, we're still on the subject of model sessions. A PC has taken responsibility for withholding from this auditor from there on out. He has dovetailed straight into the mechanics of routine 3GA. There is the bridge. There is the button that makes 3GA what it is. Because 3GA, of course, is based on the mechanics of taking full responsibility in a limited way for one purpose. The individual dedicates himself to never eating cats, you see, or some such goal, you see. He dedicates himself basically, newly, primordially, before anything occurs, you know, prime postulate. He takes full responsibility for this prime postulate, and here he goes. Now, because he's taken full responsibility for the prime postulate, he, of course, has set up a thing where all other things are otherness. So everything else is an otherness. So this is a marvelous pat, single look, and a departure from all pan-determinism. And he's had it. Or he's had it for more reasons than that. Any other action than never eating cats. See, the funny part of it is it just doesn't even have to do with cats, you know. It doesn't even have to do with eating. Just an other action. You know, like gazing at cherry trees. Is an altruistness of the basic purpose. So he mustn't do anything but it because he's taken full responsibility for it. This is what he stands for, to never eat cats. Therefore, doing anything else in the sun, moon, and stars is a breakdown of his own determinism, which, of course, is very isolated determinism. And this is the way he backs out of the universe, see? And thereby runs square into it with a thud. You see how single-minded all this gets. So therefore, other occurrences are not as-is, they are alter-is, mass gathers around these things, and that sort of thing. Now, if PC were to... you understand that it's a withhold and a miss. It's a withhold mist that louses up a session. How, have you got a reality on that these days? Wow. All right. It's the withhold mist that louses up the session, see? Now, what if a PC took responsibility for never getting any off? If you could push a PC into a point where he would make a postulate that he would never get off his withholds, you get an ARC break that no rudiments could undo. And I don't even know if a process would undo it. Because, of course, it ties right straight into the GPM, just like that. Nothing would go straighter to the heart of anything. It just key in all those basic purposes, you see. Not that they're responsibility for withholding, but they are certainly responsibility for an action of one kind or another. So when he takes responsibility for the highest button in the bank, withholding, why, of course, wow. You see why? Now, if you were to try to run a PC on this, what withholdingness have you taken responsibility for? I guarantee that you would get more somatics per square unit of PC than he ever thought existed. Because you're trying to run the GPM out from the top side down. I'm still talking about model session. So the final question of model session is under on withholds is under test at this time. I'm trying to find out, before we finalize any versions, whether or not you could ask anything that would undo the possibility that the PC had postulated that he wasn't going to tell you anything or talk to you in that session. It'd be, have you taken responsibility for any withholds? Well, that doesn't do it, of course. Have you taken responsibility for not talking to me? That might. And so forth. Well, I've got to thrash through the woods and the saurian forests and the deep bituminous zinc pits and get this one properly nailed down and so forth. That's why you don't have a final version of model session complete. But I have found a button which is in excess of all other buttons. There couldn't be any button senior to it. 3GA is clearing people. See? We're sitting there. The only indicated theory that explains this phenomenon locks up with this particular question. We've already got a reality on what happens when these things do get collided one with another. And it is quite cataclysmic. It is undone with the greatest of ease by 3GA. Maybe the rudiment process, in the end rudiments, for the final responsibility for the withhold question, whatever that works out, of course is, do 3GA, you know. I've got to work on this a little bit farther and find out if there is anything there that can be done which would wipe out any possibility of the PC doing such an idiotic thing as to deciding never to talk to the auditor again or something like that during the session. That'd be the only thing that could keep him in a permanent ARC break. And I swear to you, there'd be no process under the sun, moon, or stars could budget, because it locks right straight down against the GPM. It's absolutely bang, bang. The reason why you get occluded childhood probably is the number of times you decided you weren't going to communicate and took full responsibility for not doing so. I'm never going to talk to you again. I hate you. You're a beast. Yeah. That kind of thing. That locks right straight in on the GPM. Bang. All right, enough for that. I'm just forecasting technology there. There's nothing extraordinary about that. It's just another mechanism of the altar is of the bank responsibility for. All this altar is exists on the total responsibility the PC has taken for a basic postulate. And if he's entered such a basic postulate into the session as would actually make a goal, you could hang the session up, see, on top of the GPM, so that this particular session is now part of the GPM. He's run a GPM session. Now, the possibilities of this happening if you use the textbook solution are quite remote, but it could happen. All right, let's look a little further now. Existing technology changes in Niet. I just been waiting around and shifting around and working like a beaver, trying to get a clearing process that applied to all cases. Everybody run with any degree of expertness, high technical accuracy, yes. But anybody who has been run with expertness on 3GA, and some that have been run remotely from here, with no more than bulletin data, have gone clear. 3GA is not laying any eggs that are not very easily explained or straightened out by just straightening out the technology. So you heard so often that we're there and all of that sort of thing. But I think you have also heard that, yeah, we're clearing people, but the percentage is damn lousy. I think you heard that. Well, the reason why I wasn't concentrating in this particular line during the past year, concentrating on old clearing techniques, one of the reasons you were getting chained all the time, is I was trying to move over into the category of all cases clear, see? Clearing is no good to you or anybody else unless you can make a full sweep, you see? It can't be that Joan and Bill and Isabel can be cleared, but Mr. Snodgrass and so forth, he'll never make it. And you just get consistent randomity of various characters. Well, 3GA, apparently, and this is without any real reservation, everywhere it is, I just put apparently in because it's fashionable. 3GA has been taking every case apart that it was intelligently addressed to. Where the textbook solution of technology was applied to the case and the technique was 3GA, we got coming out the other end of the line some results. Now, of course, we had to know a little bit more about this and about that, but one learns that from what can an auditor do wrong? And what are they doing wrong at this particular time with this particular technology? And you keep that corrected up rather than shifting the basic technology. Now, I gave you a talk just last Tuesday on how you do a goals assessment and so on. Now, that talk pointed up and summarized it. That's the first actual release of 3GA, the first bulletin on 3GA is sitting on my desk half written at this moment, as formal release. The only things I was curious about and more or less were those things which were standing in people's road. I mean, I was still working on these points, trying to ask these questions and get intelligent answers. How many should a goals list consist of, you know? Can you completely discharge a goals list? Is there such a thing as a complete goals list? Yes, there is. And about how long would it be? Well, I can't tell you how long it would be, but I can tell you how short it must not be. It must not be shorter than 850. It might be longer than that. And probably the proper question on it, as you said today, is this goals list complete? Not are there any more goals? And this sort of thing, however, is it's obvious that if you haven't got a goal, that you can get a goal. We've never failed to find a goal on somebody. But what's the easy way of finding the goal? That's been the main question. As soon as this got broadly workable, I could understand more about the GPM and see a new method of tearing the GPM to pieces. And then I found out where the GPM went, so that's that. The GPM go, poof, and that's that. There is no GPM acting to finish off this type of activity. Now, how many goals do you have to list out? Well, I haven't demanded anything more than 3GA at this particular stage of the game than that it did bring the PC by listing down to a free needle. Because I know by experience that if you can bring a PC down to a free needle, you can find another goal and bring him down to a free needle. We've done this lots of times. See? And you can keep doing this. And I also know now, if the GPM entirely disappeared, how to get it back again. I can always get a GPM back. I know lots of ways. I know lots of ways. Let a psychologist question the fellow. I mean, so his needle is clear. So his needle is gorgeously clear, and so on. It's free and floating, and he's only had one goal listed. How are you going to find some more GPM to list? See, gone. You know, you can't get any tick on a goals list or something like that. I could fix that pretty easy. As long as there's any GPM there, why, and so on. I'll give you a method of doing so. This shows you how corny this could be, and so forth. Did you ever want to do anything you couldn't? Thank you, that's it. All right, just write that down as a goal and insist on auditing it for a few seconds, and the GPM will be in. And then prep check it and run out the suddenness of it, but you'll have a GPM to audit. Obviously, if the fellow can still give you a spot purpose that he couldn't do, you still have a piece lock on the GPM, you see. So you could just pull that in so that you could do enough with it so the fellow would take off and you get a registry on the meter again. That's horseplay, what I'm talking to you about, because I don't think you will run into this particular problem. But even if you did run into it, you could solve it. Now, on the problems of listing, these are very simple problems. The only real dangers, and the only thing that a graduate of St. Hill could be very careful about, is just kick the living teeth in of any untrained, unschooled auditor who is trying to use 3GA. Does bat their brains in mercilessly. Just tear off their thetan and send it in for a box of shredded wheat. Because, let me tell you, they could get a PC into more trouble than you could easily dig them out of. Now, 3GA solves 3GA. That's how you know you're there, see? You run a 3GA wrong, why, you do more 3GA to run it right. Now, it's the peculiarity of problems in this universe, in the mind, and a lot of other things, that a prime solution runs out errors to itself. See, that is the test of a prime solution. You make an error with this solution, and then it corrects the error. So therefore, it isn't a cure. That tells you it is not a cure. So 3GA is the first thing we have that isn't a cure. 3GA is not a cure. A cure does something about a prior problem. 3GA doesn't do anything about a prior problem. 3GA operates on the prime postulate. There can't be anything ahead of a prime postulate. It wouldn't even register as a goal if it weren't a prime postulate in some section track. So it isn't solving anything. Oddly enough, it solves nothing. But it puts the person into a situation where he doesn't have to be solved. This is very tricky. But you'd find out if you were discussing this with a Catholic priest or a mathematician or something of that nature. But they would tell you that the prime mover unmoved is the only thing that can resolve the prime mover unmoved. That's right. See, that's perfectly true. It's a mathematical fact. The only thing that divides 7 is 7, you know, that kind of thing. And you've got one of those things in 3GA. But somebody using it isn't so dangerous that you, as an auditor, cannot undo the damage done, providing the person's still alive, see? You could undo it. But he could really wind somebody up in a ball, you know? Some corny auditing, and auditing over the top of missed width holes, and messing it up and finding the wrong goal, and as they inevitably would, listing the thing. The reason I say this is because I've never seen right goals found broadly. The number of wrong goals I've seen found in the field is terrific. That's too many. I know some of you blame yourselves occasionally for having found wrong goals or maybe something of this sort. Well, you'll find wrong goals until you go at it in a perfect textbook method and with a total prep check, and there's too many things can make in a goal apparently stay in, don't you see? And you get a supercharged list that you haven't exhausted any of the charge out of it is. You've got a goals list of 15. Well, the charge is liable to go around and round on this 15, you see, and things are liable to shift one way or the other. You could get a goal that reacted all right, but it's much more likely just reacting because the whole subject of goals is charged than because it's the goal. Now, you list that thing, and it's going to beef up the bank. It'll beef up the bank worse than any creative process we have ever had. It is pure agony. Of course, you start running an altar is. You see, and what are you going to get? You're going to get altar is. Well, mass is altar is. So, of course, the longer you run it, the more mass in the mind you're going to get. So, some character's going to be very insouciant, and he's going to know how to audit there. He got an E-meter. He had it built. He got a couple of pipe wrenches and hooked them up somehow. And he's really going to go to town, and he can find somebody's goal all right, because he knows what the PC's goal is already. As a matter of fact, he tells him, in fact. And what do you know? You know that goal will react after that? It's marvelous, but it'll go right on reacting. And you, if you didn't know prep checking, could actually test that goal and you'd find out it was in. To be an old witch, you see, or something like this. Doesn't even have to be an insulting goal. Oh, well, I see here you've got old appearing on your goals list a lot of times and so forth. You often talk about witches, so therefore I can see here plainly that your goal is to be an old witch. All right, to be an old witch, tick, to be an old witch, tick, to be an old witch, tick, you see? A fellow who didn't know his business could actually come along afterwards and say, what's the PC, what's your goal? And he said, to be an old witch. And he'd go, tick, 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 marvelous. Look just like a goal. You prep check the thing and go, pfft. Because it's been suggested to the PC. And the misowningness of it has made it sees up into the GPM, you see. Wrong ownership causes it to read. You can always make a goal read. Now, if you take that goal and you list it, the mass in the bank is going to increase and increase and increase, and the PC is going to feel worse and worse and worse and be more and more unhappy and unhappy and unhappy. That's why you must only handle a valid goal, and why you mustn't let people who are not qualified monkey this stuff. Now, furthermore, a person who is briefly trained and so forth may be able to put forth a fair technical show and so forth. Well, let's say he's had a PE course and been on the co-audit, you know, and something like that, and he's going to find himself a goal. Well, man, he can do it, you see. He can find himself a goal. He can find himself almost any kind of a goal he wants. And he can list it. The next thing you know, the PC's eyes are sticking out about an inch and a half from underneath his lids, or are sunk back an inch and a half into the skull or something like this. And he's getting nauseated and he's dizzy and so forth. And then somebody, this fellow reads in a book, and well, the process to turn it on will turn it off, so he goes on listing it. So you're dealing in a sphere where you have exceeded old class one processes, of which this is totally true. You can allow somebody up with this done wrong. You can find the goal, prove it out. You could list it, you see, and the PC caves in. Well, why is that? Must be Scientology doesn't work. So anyhow, there is your limit of use. The people who are not adequately trained to do this sort of thing shouldn't be using it, that's all. Some academy might try to teach this to new HPAs or something like that, you see. No, they haven't been in the saddle long enough. That's about what it amounts to. They don't appreciate anything that goes on. They wouldn't be enough on the ball. They couldn't catch it that quick. They'd still be fumbling with the sensitivity knob, which they never got checked out, you know. So anyway, actually, we are at a position now where all we've got to do is kick up the general grade of auditing. You speak of training. Should a St. Hill graduate train? Yes, by all means. Don't, however, run a 4, 5, 6, 8 week course someplace and call it a class 2 course and have some people on it and that sort of thing. Don't do that kind of training. Rather, get some people, I don't care if they pay you or don't pay you, say, yeah, I'll bring you up to scruff. Yeah, I'll make something out of you. And run them through check sheets and classes or anything you care to over a period of time until they can audit, don't you see? I'm talking about old-time auditors bringing up the stuff and so on. That's what I mean when I say a St. Hill graduate should train. As far as somebody going on a full-time course is concerned, it takes today a considerable staff and a lot of administrative organization to handle this thing, and you would wind up the loser if you tried to handle something like that. Oh, yeah, by all means, say, all right, I'm running a bit of a center here. You want to be an apprentice to this activity? All right, I'll require, when you are finally fully trained, I will require 1,000 hours of auditing of you, of PCs of my selection and collection. I don't care what you do. But, by all means, train them up, apprentices, train them up any way you want to. See? Your training, to a large degree, would be lost if you didn't do such a thing. As far as putting him in a formal class 2 type of course is concerned, saying you come here for 5 weeks, and that's Abernet, bum show. You haven't the equipment or anything else to do so. You got a lot of people upset with you, and so on. Way to do it, say, well, if you want to hang around for the next 2 years and contribute £1,000 to the center, well, we'll make you an auditor at the other end of the line. I don't care what you tell them, but it must be on the basis of you got to stick around long enough till you can do it, and you abide by whether I tell you you can do it or not. You understand? That would be the end of that. Now, when an academy would run a retread course on a grind, daytime basis, remember that it is not qualified to issue a classification. It can say that it's a class 2 course, but it doesn't make a class 2 auditor. This is the regulations along the line. Yes, by all means, train some people. I used to train auditors on this basis myself. I'd go downstairs to eat breakfast and so on. We're actually back in the old swing of 42 Aberdeen Road practically now. I want to say goodnight to the children. I have to go. Go outside where they're sitting talking to an auditor, you know, call them in and tell them that. This is usual or ordinary. You shouldn't, however, mess yourself up to this extent. Let them audit PCs for you before they don't know what they're doing, because you will very quickly learn this lesson yourself. There's no reason for my telling you this at this particular stage of the game. You see, you'd find it out for yourself. You'd learn fast. People be on the phone 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. The police would be coming up from the morgue to find out if they could identify. It'd be a cheerful scene. Some of you may have seen the code of ethics of the National Academy of American Psychology cooked up by us. You might have seen that, you know. Must be willing to accept the treatment they dish out, you know. Do you ever see those? Well, we're thinking of calling this a convention. A convention of ethics. The convention of ethics of international healing. You see. So that we have the World Mental Health Organization. Now, this is the only horrible plot that's in the very near future. We incorporate this thing in Switzerland, see? It's the World Mental Health Organization. And its literature cannot be told from the World Health Organization, you see? We have credentials which we issue to people who subscribe to the Convention of International Healing Ethics, you see. And we give them a certificate they can hang on the wall. Well, it has various things like not curing people they can't help, you know, all these various embarrassing points. Returning people's money if they don't help them. You know, the very things that these plugs out there would never dream of approaching, you know. Guy can't give a prefrontal lobotomy by it unless he's had one, you know. So anyway, this is this sort of thing. Now, this doesn't go out on a common line at all. What we do is, this is just a mock-up. This might not come to view, you see, but we're going to try to push it in that direction. And that is, we appoint people around the world, inspectors, for the World Mental Health Organization. And they have a card that identifies them perfectly, you see, a perfectly fine card. And they have a questionnaire. They have several types of questionnaire. One is for a doctor's office, one is for a psychiatric office. One is for a psychology department of a university. One is for a mental hospital, one is for a regular hospital. And sometime when you want a lot of laughs, you see, like, you take your card down and you see Dr. Kutzman, and you simply walk in. You hand him this, and it announces you're an inspector from the World Mental Health Organization. Now, that's a perfectly valid organization, don't you see? And we actually are the only World Mental Health Organization there is. So you want to fill out this form. You want to know about his results. And you want to know about his technology and his facilities and his credentials. And you just fill out a form representing those various things. And it's in triplicate. You send one to the Minister of Health of the government of the country you're in as failed. Failed and forwarded to the international headquarters in Switzerland. And the other thing, you simply send it to his superiors, whoever they are. Board of Trustees of the hospital, don't you see? And the other one, of course, you send to Switzerland. It's a very interesting Saturday morning's work when you're walking around someplace. Think of going into a mental hospital and presenting a car to inspect their results and their facilities and their technology, you know, and their ethics and credentials. Think of this, man. You'll be surprised. It's not just a gag, because I think the right to inspect gives the right to command. And it's your first gradient scale step overtaking control. All you do is inspect. What you tell a person, you're very pleasant, you see, while you're in such an interview. Very pleasant about the whole thing. He protests. Oh, you people, I've heard about you people. You're about your quacks and bubbies. Yeah, that's fine. Opinion of World Mental Health Organization. Bunch of quacks and bums. Yeah, you can have a lot of fun with that. Anyway, you'd be surprised if they'd actually get all whipped up about this sort of thing. Inspect the Department of Psychology of Natal University. Of course, obviously, they haven't anybody there who is qualified to teach anything about the human mind. Nobody's graduated from the Academy of Scientology in Johannesburg. They haven't got one in the place. You put it down as a serious omission. Numerous false credentials in the area. I mean, it'd be a lot of fun. Well, actually, you don't have to do it at all, but very often you have PE courses and you have people coming in asking you what they can do. So you appoint them as inspectors. Yeah, I think there'd be a lot of red faces, wouldn't there? But I think the right to inspect is something that you can simply create by assumption. And I think it's a gradient step on the right to command. You're actually going to get people worried about this. They'll be worried about you. Now, it might work out that one copy goes to the newspaper. You see, one copy goes to the Minister of Health of the country, and the other copy goes in. We'll work out these little details later. But I can hear the scream now from the Sunday-Monday line clear around to the Sunday-Monday line, you see. Campaigns on the floor of the United Nations that we have abrogated their authority. It's all good publicity. Nobody can do anything to you at all for inspecting. Newspapers could become very worried that they had a hospital in the place that was not qualified, was not staffed by qualified practitioners, and that killed patients and had been condemned by the World Mental Health Organization. Spin Bin Lawn Hospital condemned by World Mental Health Organization. Dr. Kutzman declared to have inadequate training and credentials. Quack doctor commands hospital. Maybe we'll have a rightist press that'll be as enthusiastic someday as the leftist press. Not that we're right or left. Actually, you know politically where we stand. We're so far to the left that we sometimes look right. If communist ever asks you where you stand politically, the way to worry him, is to come down on him with all 4 feet by wanting a government. And he'll look at you and he'll know exactly what speech to give you. He'll pull it right out of the file. It's how you deal with an anarchist. And he'll say the valuable parts of governments. Governments serve a useful purpose. See, and he'll try to argue you into not revolution, but how you have to have a government. So forth. I don't think very many of us would buy that. But we're actually so far to the left, we sometimes look to the right. We actually are not on the spectrum at all. But where it comes to reasonableness, You can't be sensible on this planet at this particular time and belong any place on the spectrum of government or politics. Okay, well, having given you a few words of cheer and forecast, why we declare it closed. Thank you.